Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Hello and welcome in. It is the Wednesday edition of The Drive. Dan Peck in the studio with Coach Don Dunn. Bill Cameron still on the IL, you know, still on the
injured reserve.
Yeah, he's still, we've still got him inactive, although we may get a drive-by, a guest appearance from Bill at some point during the show. We'll see if that happens, if he's up for it. I think we've got things covered. Drew's at the controls, pushing the buttons, making sure the levels are all correct so that I don't have to make gestures during the show telling him to pot people up and down. He's going to watch the levels like a hawk today.
Oh yeah.
And of course we've got Jason Caldwell in the house, and it's always great on a Wednesday to talk to our good buddy, and it's a to say the least, it's a busy time right now as you gear up for the start of the college football season.
It is. I was thinking about it today, and then me and Madame were reminiscing a little bit that it's busy, but it's so different than when I started this job that it feels that I'm going to make it make sense a little bit. I remember because I walked by the old intramural fields yesterday and went on a walk of this stuff before campus gets too busy. And this time of year in 2004 or 2003. We would have started at 6 o'clock in the morning, 5:30, and the lights would have been on at the intramural fields, and there would be a practice going on, and then you would do some interviews. Then you would come back, and there'd be a light kicking game, special teams practice during the afternoon, and then you'd go back out about 4:30, and there'd be another practice, and you would have interviews after that day. So those were 12-hour days,
and two-a-day season,
and they were legitimately 2.5 weeks of that almost.
Yeah.
And now it's just
you knew the roster so intensely by the end of the season, right?
Like,
by the end of that. I mean, yeah, you knew it, a lot of
correct.
Going in.
Yeah, but yeah, so much different than this because those guys, they were there. They didn't go anywhere because if you transferred, you had to sit out a year. So it was the same guys you saw over the big difference now. The biggest difference of all is that even though guys worked out in the summer, two-a-days at that time were to get guys prepared for the season. Now, you knew immediately on day one whether or not a guy was going to be able to play because the freshman guys, most of the time those guys did not report. So you had to depend on them to be prepared and ready to play. Like Cadillac Williams showed up day one, even though he was 180 pounds, you went, that guy's going to play. There were other guys you went, nope. You're not ready. You're not going to be able to get into shape enough to learn and to get the reps to be prepared. Now that's not a concern because these guys they're here all summer. So now there don't have to be as many practices, and you don't have to practice as long because a lot of preseason in 2000 was getting guys prepared to play. Right.
Right. And you know, also Jason, you remember we would have the freshmen sometimes practice an hour by themselves.
Correct.
Yeah. And then all of them on offense,
yep,
and bring them back and put them all on defense,
yep,
plus the other practice.
Yep, yep. Two or three days early, they, yep, might be just a freshman practice.
Right,
yep,
right.
There's the prevalence of reclassification too, right? I mean, you said they've been here all summer. Most of these guys were here in the spring when you're talking about the true freshmen.
Correct.
On this team. Was it just Omar and the Smiths?
Yeah, Omar the Smiths, Cale Ellis.
Yeah.
And then Jacoby Ward, offensive line from Benedictine, who they, mm-hmm, don't allow to graduate early.
Right.
So those five guys, two of those guys, not only reclassification, it's reclassification a full year. Because Omar and Cale Ellis would just be seniors in high school now.
And I feel like that's a good place to start because that's one of the stories of the first week. And you don't want to get carried away.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think not avoiding overreaction is important. But Jason, I'm thrilled you're here because I would love to sort of get a read on some players that, in your opinion, have improved their position? Guys where maybe, like, has anyone changed your mind about how much they could contribute or where they could fit in over the last week or so based on what you've seen and heard?
Yeah. And we talked about this a couple weeks ago. There's a couple of spots where you're able to make a quicker impact. Running back is one of those. It's not like playing middle linebacker or quarterback where you go, you can play that position and go, man, you can make some impact while learning an offense. Obviously, Omar is one of those guys that you look and go, man, he shows up. And I think there's something to remember about him that worked the same way it did last year for Malcolm Simmons, in that they live close enough to campus that they could be here for every spring practice. That's a big deal because he was able to go and learn some terminology, figure out, talk to the running backs. Whereas
I hadn't even thought about his access.
That's it.
You know, for a guy who's still a senior in high school.
Such a big difference for him and just the mental side of it to get a little bit of a head start. Now, physically, I mean, 5'9", 213, you look at him and go, that guy looks like, you know, he's ready to go. So I think that's one of the guys. Cale Ellis is another guy that you're talking about.
Can we just say with Omar, though?
Yeah.
I think it's also important to consider the status of Damari and Jeremiah,
yeah,
because I think that Omar's had a very promising start to, you know, his first week, his first week on the team, or his first week in fall camp. I still wonder, with everyone available,
the reps,
what his opportunities look like this season, but he's as advertised,
yeah,
coming in. And that's something, you know, I think we sort of were just talking about the upperclassmen options at running back, and you know it's been unfortunate that Damari dealt with was a heel.
Yeah, and he looked okay yesterday, I think, or we saw him a little bit day before yesterday.
You got good news today from Coach Freeze, who spoke to the media and said that Jeremiah Cobb's been given the green light, and
yep,
apparently he'll be full contact, and that's important because how about this, Coach? Hugh Freeze mentioned that maybe one of the most important three-day periods you have during fall camp, the two practices leading up to the first scrimmage, mm-hmm, and then that first scrimmage itself. And the second one maybe is going to be an even more, you know, like that's an even more important opportunity to evaluate because that's moving day at some of those positions. But
right,
but he mentioned that today, tomorrow, and Friday, the expectations are a little bit different than they've been to this point. Since we're talking about running backs, and I want to get back to Ellis,
yeah,
but I would have Darrell Robinson on my list of guys that have been eye-openers or eye-popping at times.
Yeah.
I think he's really looked as impressive as he's needed to look through the first few days.
Yeah, and I think we didn't get to see him in the spring, so
right,
that was some of that. So, you know, this is the time of year, and it sets the table for the first scrimmage. Because historically, the first scrimmage is almost cut day where you go, you figure out which freshmen are going to be able to help you because you have to know now. Because you go like, well, we can't keep doing this if he's not prepared to go or if you don't see enough. This will be kind of that dividing line for the young guys going, okay, who can help us now? Who's not quite ready yet? That's usually what happens in scrimmage number one. I think we're learning who guys are going to get that opportunity on Friday when you start talking about some of these young guys.
Yeah, and I hijacked the Cale Ellis point that you were
about to make. I think that's one of the guys, because here's what I firmly believe about Cale Ellis right now. And I mean, they're just a week and a half in. I believe that there's a good chance he's your starting center next season. Connor Lue stays healthy. I think he's a potential first-round pick at center. I think he's going to be that highly rated. Because of that, Cale Ellis is a guy, normally you would say, let's redshirt that guy. I think you may play him some, even at 17 years old, because next year he may be your starter. He's 6'4", 315, center. This is a bigger, more physical body that looks, I mean, he looks the part for sure. I think that's one of the guys that, I mean, you get a little bit more of a taste of here in the next couple of weeks to see, okay, is he really ready to be that guy? Now, saying that, I don't think he's Auburn's number two center. But
I wonder if Wade.
I think Dylan Wade is the number two center.
We speculated absolutely about that in the spring. The thought that Dylan Wade's played and so Dylan much college Senda. Football.
Dylan Senda. Now he's a lefty, so it's a little bit different look. So you got a couple of guys that have some opportunities there at center. So I do think those are the two guys that would probably be behind Connerly right now.
I have been really impressed by the. I mean, just in terms of appearance. The fact that the true freshman defensive linemen look as ready to go, and then you see them in drills. And granted, like I'm not in position to tell you how well they're doing and who's excelling and who isn't on the defensive line, but these guys look the part, and it feels like the way Coach Freeze is talking, where he wants 15 to 20 full throttle plays out of his defensive linemen rather than, you know, pacing yourself because you're going to have to play 45 or 50. If you're treating them like relief pitchers instead of starting pitchers, I feel like that math only works if Crawford and Autry are two of the guys giving you 15 to 20 full throttle snaps. Like the, you know, you're going to need some of those guys, and they look, you've seen far more of those two. And I should probably mention Antonio Coleman too, right? But like those guys are all. I mean, they seem like they're, you know, you were just talking about a true freshman on the offensive line. Seems like Auburn's got multiple candidates on the defensive line who look like they could be in the picture this year, could be playing against Baylor. What do you think of that?
Yeah, we'll start with defense first. The difference in this team and the last couple, I mean, last year they had some guys that could rotate, but it feels like the difference between 1999, where you look and you've got a freshman starting at 255 pounds at defensive tackle because mm-hmm. you're like, well, he's their best guy.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't have, to now going, we don't have to play that guy 45 to 50 snaps a game. We can play him 30, 35. Now, Keldrick Falk is going to get majority of the snaps. I think you look at him, there's a couple of guys, I think he's the one that you look at and go, you're going to have that guy on the field for 50 plays.
Yeah, especially in crucial situations.
Correct.
Third down.
And you'll have to get to that point on the interior mm-hmm. where you're going, who's the guy that's on the field in the fourth quarter with the game on the line?
Right.
Now, it may be different depending on the team you play. You know, maybe a team like Georgia, they're running the football, and you're going, okay, well, we're going to have – and I'm telling you, Dallas Walker, for me, has been a little bit of a surprise.
Okay.
Because people look at him and they go, that guy weighs 360. He can't – he moves okay. Mm-hmm. Again, he moves okay, and you're not going to have to play him 50 snaps because he would not move okay after snap seven in a row.
Right.
But three, I think you're okay. But, yeah, you look at Jordan Crawford and Malik Autry and Darion Smith as a pass rusher, third down interior. You know, you're talking about, okay, it's third and 14. Maybe you got Keldry Falk in the middle and Darion Smith at 275 and Amaris Williams and Keyron Crawford. And you got that group together.
How about when I had to change my – here's some pull behind the curtain here was mm-hmm. that I had a question at the press conference. Peter does a great job. He's doing, you know, he's doing a fantastic job writing for L.com. He asked the exact question I was going to ask right before they hand the mic to me. So I scramble on the fly and I ask, well, all right, well, give me some, you know, some second-year guys that have really stepped up and, mm-hmm. and have improved their position from last year this year. I feel like Amaris was one of the first ones. I mean, he compliments Perry and Malcolm's route running.
Yeah.
He talks about those are the guys that have really taken a step forward as far as what they can do in their second year. Amaris was the one where he went into a lot of detail about, and I was thinking that's a guy that it feels like there's two questions there, Jason. It's how many, in general, how many players do you know, how big is the rotation going to be, and then who's in your best 11? And how fresh can you keep those 11 players?
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, with Amaris and Keldrick.
I honestly, it feels like to me they're the same, but they're a little different. Because I think, it comes back to me a little bit on the team you're playing. If you're playing a Missouri that maybe wants to spread you out and do more quick game and do some of those things, those are two guys you may play together. You may say, look, we'll play those guys together and have two – a traditional 4-3 where you're going instead of a 3-4 look with a stand-up, we may play more, and Amaris can stand up and Keltrick can too. But maybe you do that some depending on the opposition.
I'll tell you what this feels like, and it's a story that doesn't necessarily end with the player playing his best football, but there was a period in time where he was a huge part of the attack. so much of 2017 was focused around Derek and Marlon.
Marlon.
And you had, you know, two and clear NFL prospects there on the defensive line. And I remember you and Pat Dye and a lot of other people who got to see some practice in 17, you know, you would say, hey, Nick Coe is a guy who's suddenly, like, he's connecting the dots as far as what he can do physically and what he needs to do on the field. And he ended up being a big part of that 2017 defense. I wonder if there's an avenue like that for Amaris, where you have multiple players you just mentioned. I mean, there were times when Amaris on Saturday, like, that was the guy that I came away thinking, wow, that's you know, the eye popping, I think, yeah, was the phrase I used with Ferguson, because it's just like you can tell that this guy's potential is off the charts.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and I think maybe a couple of weeks ago we talked about this. Like, he's a bigger version, but it feels like Reggie Torbert a little bit to me, mm-hmm, where you're going.
How's that sound, Coach?
Man, like, athletic,
pretty good
running back. Once you figure out what it takes to play with your hand in the dirt and doing those things, then you can let that stuff go. You can go, okay, now turn it loose a little bit. Last year, it kind of felt like, what, man, I'm used to just running by guys. Well, you're not going to do that at this level. Now, can you combine your technique with that athleticism? And, like, he's 265. I mean, like, he's not small. I mean, he can really run. And so, I think about that, and I think about a Keyron Crawford, and you think about the guys at that position and go, all of a sudden, like, if you put those two guys on the field, maybe those two guys in a nose, and you're going, all right, putting a Keyron Crawford and go, okay, you can drop. Those guys can drop and play a third linebacker, and with DeMarcus Riddick. And
done that with Murray,
yes,
too, right?
So,
they've used a little bit of the
So all of a sudden, you give yourself the chance to be really, really multiple. And if there's anything that offenses do not like, it's walking to the line of scrimmage and not really knowing what that defense is doing based on personnel, because that's the key. Of everything you're doing right now, personnel is always the key. Because I remember, Don, you yell is ADO and all the things you're doing. You're looking at offensive personnel, and it's the same thing on offense. If you can be multiple and have guys that can do different things on offense and line up in different places, it makes it really hard.
And beyond the outside corners and the defensive linemen, it feels like they've really prioritized, all right, well, we need guys that can do it all, that can play all three downs on defense. And, you know, that means playing against the run, that means playing against the pass, being a threat in the pass rush.
That's it. And with teams doing hurry up, if you don't have that, then you're dead in the water. Because if you get caught with the wrong personnel on the field and they can't do something, or teams know it and they've got a matchup, there's not a whole lot you can do if they decide to keep going.
We got Jason for the first hour. We'll talk more about the first week of spring practice. As a matter of fact, I want to know, when we come back, how about a couple of the new arrivals at linebacker that got checked, got name checked by Hugh Freeze at the press conference earlier today. We'll talk about that position and a lot more. Got the SEC men's basketball schedule earlier today. We could mention that and anything you want to talk about. 334-321-1390. That's the phone number, the Drive Hotline presented by Skybar. We will be back with more Dan and Don and Drew, the 3D, along with our good buddy Jason Caldwell. So stick around. This is The Drive.
The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back. Wednesday edition of The Drive. Dan Peck, Coach Don Dunn, Drew at the controls. Jason Caldwell, our good buddy, hanging out with us. And Jason, tell folks where they can find all the cool stuff you're doing.
Yeah, we got a lot going on. Like I said, just continue to – thankfully, hey, I want to thank Hugh Freeze, and we're getting a lot of information. We'll get a chance to see practice again tomorrow. We got to see the entire practice Saturday, which was great. Interviews. We had, you know, players tomorrow as well. We've had – so it's been really good access, and so – lots of things going on. Obviously, Freeze today, like, it's 29 minutes, and it's 29 minutes of really good, you know, talk, and he's very honest, and so it's I think it takes a while to get used to for folks. I'm like, hey, he's going to tell you what he thinks. And so, but yeah, got a lot going on. Come check us out. Right now, too, if you've never subscribed before, 50% off, or you're a monthly. If you're a monthly subscriber or never subscribed right now, 50% off. So you can get a half price deal for the year for an annual subscription. So it's a great time to come check us out.
You mentioned, or we were talking before the break, Hugh Freeze, was not like, if you remember Siskel and Ebert, they were real enthusiastic. You get a two thumbs up. I don't think Hugh Freeze was given two thumbs up to the practice today. And maybe that was psychological and motivational, but he came in acknowledging, like we were talking about the first segment, Coach, this is an important 3-day stretch in preseason practice. He's going to dial up the physicality compared to what they've done so far. Mm-hmm. And he was, he thought maybe they left, they understanding that they left something in the tank potentially as a team. Because he wanted to, I think he was upset about how many times the coaches had to get on the players about energy. I think that was the sense I got from practice.
Yeah, they had
coaches report about practice.
They were off yesterday, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Sometimes when you're going along, it sets you back for some reason when you take a day off. I don't know if it's the mental part, not concentrating. And sometimes you have that little letdown when you first come back. That's why a lot of coaches don't like open dates, because it throws you off.
Yeah.
Plus, it's what, day six?
Six, yeah. Something.
You're getting a little tired, getting a little, sore, whatever.
As Coach said, it got a little humid.
Yeah, they're outside full time for the first time. Yeah. And the other part of it, too, Don, is like, it's just human nature.
Yes.
You're not going to go through camp and go, well, man, every day was really good. That's
right.
It's just not the way it works.
That's right.
And if it does, then you're in trouble.
Yeah. Somebody's.
Because that means somebody on the other side is not doing very good right. either.
Coach Freeze name checked a couple of linebackers when he talked about players that did bring the energy to date practice. We'll talk to Jason about that. But let's get to the phones. And Brett, who's hanging on. What's up, Brett?
Hey, Dan. Jason, how is Wheatland doing? I've seen on some message boards some saying that he was kind of struggling with the new system or whatever. Have you noticed him doing well? Or?
Well, I'll tell you what, on Saturday, the first three or four plays that we saw in kind of some team and support, he's the guy that made tackles. And so, now they were thud tackles, but – I think he's looked pretty good. I mean,
he chased down Singleton. Yeah, on one of those reverses.
He's the guy that can run, and so I think him and Woodyard there, and then Elijah Melendez. I would say those two older guys probably from an experience standpoint would be guys that'll both get a look and get some run. But he's done a good job. The hard part is that he's an experienced guy, but he wasn't here in the spring, and so that middle linebackers, they're a tougher spot. So probably. Still thinking a little bit more maybe than some of the other guys.
That's a position, though, Brett, where I think there probably are more names than spots, because between Riddick and Wheatland and Robert Woodyard and Xavier Atkins and Juice and Melendez, getting all six of those guys consistent playing time is – I mean, that's a difficult task when you're talking about – two spots on a defense. So I do wonder if, I do wonder if that number, and that's, that I mean, I might have left somebody out, but there's, I mean, I think those six are the ones we've heard the most about. And I just wonder if, I wonder if six is a sustainable number for that rotation, or if, if these next couple of practices, these next couple of scrimmages could be really crucial for those guys to shore up their playing time.
Well, Dan, let me ask y'all this. With Baylor, Baylor who throws the ball real well, do you think, since we've got this Jacoby Matthews fella, he's a good-sized safety, do you think we'll go to six guys in the secondary and one linebacker against some?
Yeah, and the Baylor – now, here's the thing. Baylor will throw it, but their quarterback – can run it. They ran the ball pretty good bit, and quarterback run is part of that too. I think, again, everything's going to be situational. I don't think you're going to just line up and say, hey, there might be a third down in some situations where you might go with a dime defense. I would say that you'll be pretty heavy five DBs in that game where you go two linebackers forward. And then, obviously, DeMarcus Riddick's the guy, Xavier Atkins, Bryce Diaz, those three guys are all athletic enough to play in secondary and to do some coverage stuff too. So it would give you the appearance of being able to play with kind of another DB while they're still playing linebacker.
Right. Okay. All right. Thanks a lot, guys.
Appreciate it. And in the secondary, since we mentioned it anyway, it feels like Kane and Jay Crawford have had, pretty strong, pretty consistent first weeks as the top two corners. Jay Crawford's a guy, another guy Hugh Freeze singled out today. He's somebody, talked about this with Andy yesterday. I just think, like, with Jay Crawford, he had to think that he was a ways away from playing time last year because there were veterans, multiple seemingly, sort of blocking his path. You cut to what, week five, week six, he's starting, and he's consistently in the starting lineup for the rest of the season. I really want to see that second year from a guy like that because, I mean, he was up for the task in his first year physically, mentally, and he's gotten rave reviews. I think people are looking elsewhere at the secondary as far as competition and evaluation because Kane and Jay Crawford are.
It doesn't feel like there's very much a corner, even though they've added Rayon Strader. Rayshon Pleasant got back today, and it feels like kind of the fifth guy there. When you start talking about some of that, would probably Blake Woodby. It kind of feels like he's the fifth guy. But obviously, you got Champ Anthony that could slide back in there.
He's been playing all over the secondary.
Yeah, he's everywhere. That's the thing about safety. The safety nickel spots, to me, are going to move around. And quite honestly, it's so much harder for those guys to single themselves out right now because one-on-one, one-on-ones with a wide receiver corner, you go, man, one-on-one in the middle of the field for a safety with a wide receiver with no help and no pass rush is a losing battle. That's like I always laugh when they have these camps and they line up. They do it at the Senior Bowl too, and they line up a running back on linebacker and give him the whole field to run a route. And you go, well, yeah, the running back better win that one. Same thing for these safeties. But
I'm trying to remember. I think it was a couple years ago where this would have been a while ago. I'm not even going to say who the player was because I'm afraid I'm going to get it wrong. But they did a drill where it was like a long drag route for a receiver that the corner had to go step for step, and eventually the receiver got enough space. I think the corner even remarked, like, this isn't a football game.
No.
That's not the way. You're not going to have that much time.
That 55-yard crossing route and that took you 7 seconds is probably not going to happen during the game. You're right. I think you look at those guys, they've been really good, and so I think that's going to be a strength of this team now. Can you get enough pass rush? Because if you don't, it doesn't matter who you have out there. It becomes really difficult at corner. But, you kind of alluded to the athleticism. And across the board, this is so much more athletic defense. You mentioned Bryce Diaz and Xavier Atkins and DeMarcus Riddick, those guys. I do think there's – even though they would like to have guys be able to play both spots, it feels like because of body style and play – feels like there's a distinction. These guys feel like middle, and these guys feel like more of that outside linebacker spot. And it feels like it's 3-3. And so I think that's one thing to watch for this team is can you have maybe a DeMarcus Riddick rotate over and do a little bit of both?
Yeah, I just wonder if that's going to be a position that'll be especially buzzy coming out of this week's scrimmage and especially next week's scrimmage. Right, as you start to wonder, like, and again, you need more than the normal allotment there, right? Because you're probably talking about a position where it's tough to stay healthy, and you're going to have to go to your depth pretty routinely.
But yeah, you're going to need, I would say, five guys, especially if you have guys that can play both spots. If you have five linebackers for two positions. Secondary-wise now, you're talking about a bunch more guys.
We got to take a break. Second time, though, Hugh Freeze singled out Xavier Atkins for his athleticism, talking about that's a guy who can even recover from his mistakes because he's got that kind of speed and athleticism. 334-321-1390, that's the number to dial. You want to join the show via the Drive Hotline presented by Skybar. We'll be back with more. You're listening to The Drive.
Cameron and Dan Peck.
on Auburn Opelika's sports leader, ESPN 106.7.
Welcome back. Wednesday edition of The Drive. Dan Peck in the studio with the coach, Don Dunn. Drew at the controls. Our good buddy Jason Caldwell hanging out with us for hour number one. Maybe a Bill Cameron appearance in hour number two. We'll see if Bill's up for it. Jason, we got the SEC men's basketball schedule with the season about 3 months away or so. I got the email today with the 18 game slate. I think we already knew the opponents. Now we know when all of the games are. Auburn ending the season March 7th. Iron Bowl against Alabama in Tuscaloosa. Home game against Alabama will be February 7th, exactly 1 month earlier. The home games in January, Georgia, or the home games in January, A&M on the 6th/7th. How about some flex dates there?
Really interesting.
Is that Tuesday, Wednesday?
It's got to be. Yeah. I mean, I don't think, yeah.
Saturday, Sunday is probably not what they're doing there.
Yeah, that is
keeping the option open for ESPN for television. Auburn's got several weeknight flex games throughout the slate. And you know, if there's anything all that interesting about the schedule, you can let me know. But I'm thinking you've gotten to see some practice. You're pretty excited about this group that they've got. I mean, Tahad Pettiford and an entirely new team around him. I think figuring out. You're talking about competition on the football field.
It'll be the same way in basketball.
I mean, there is competition for these minutes. Pretty much everywhere you look.
Yeah, I think the thing that it's going to be such a different team because they're not going to play half court back to the basket, dump the ball in the post basketball. That's not going to happen. Now they may get forced into a half court game, but it's not going to be played that way. It's not going to be dump it in and you might have some lobs and things like that because they're really athletic. But this is a team I think is going to shoot more threes. I think they're going to be much more up and down the court.
You've got a more ball dominant player, I would think, this year in Tahad. I know Janai, was pretty ball dominant, but it's different as a forward low post option. I would think this could resemble, the Steve Nash Suns or the James Harden teams, where you're running a ton of high screen and roll with Tahad. And forcing defenses to react.
Yes, I think that's absolutely going to happen because when you do that and you do it with guys who can also shoot, that was kind of the thing last year that was a hindrance. Where if you did that with Dylan or you did it with some of those guys, they weren't really worried about anything but the role, so they could slack off and do some of that stuff and make sure he didn't. So this year you start doing that with some of these guys, and they're going to have to choose what they defend. And so it almost feels a little bit like Auburn's wide receivers, where you're going like, okay, something's going to be open. Mm-hmm. If you make the right decision, then you're going to have a good chance at success. And I think it kind of feels the same way basketball. Like, look, you're going to have to pick your poison on how to defend this team with Tahad because he splits double teams and gets downhill in such a hurry.
And I thought they prioritized finding guys who finish at the rim in the portal at different positions. And you've talked about the way this team shoots the ball. And so it's like, and those are two things. If you're gonna try to build a team around a ball dominant point guard, and you're gonna throw a million screener rolls at the other team.
Yeah, you play more of more of an NBA style of things. And honestly, I can see it a little
bit.
It's
crazy to think it's 20 years ago. Those Phoenix Suns teams with Nash.
Yeah,
like those are like he was like with the 05 and 06 MVP.
No,
but it's like, but that's the model. And I mean, maybe the Curry Warriors are a more recent example of that. If you wanted to see
a little bit, but it doesn't feel like to me.
They share it a little more than this team.
I'm going to say this, but like to me, Tahad feels like a more explosive player than Steph Curry, though, in terms of splitting things, getting downhill. That's Steph.
Harden's probably a better comp for that. People have used Kyrie.
Yeah.
Last year, Jay Williams talked about how Tahad reminded him more of Kyrie.
Yeah, and I think I think he's the guy that's going to run the show. And I think for him, can you do those things while still bringing other guys with you? That's how you learn how to be the leader that you have to be to play that position. And I think that's going to be the big thing.
And I love that he was taken under the wing of Janai Broome, who was last year's leader for a big chunk of the season. And I think that's it's really cool to see Jani sort of building, building a bridge to next season, even though he's not going to be on the team, by showing a guy who was most likely the best player on next year's team, you know, showing him sort of how to lead.
Yeah, and then you start looking at, you know, the schedule now that you have to play so many new guys, and you look at Purdue and Arizona, NC State, Oregon, Michigan in the non-conference against some others, and then I do think it sets up well from an SEC standpoint. We've seen some brutal starts for them, but you're at Georgia, they'll be better, but they also, you know, just lost an NBA guy. But you get Texas A&M and Arkansas at home, at Missouri, South Carolina, at Ole Miss, before you have to go to Florida. But then you start a gauntlet. I mean, January 24th, you're at Florida. Then you get Texas, at Tennessee, Alabama.
I think that four-game stretch the four-game stretch, depending on how you view Mississippi State, the four-game stretch starting on January 31st, at Tennessee, Alabama at home, Vanderbilt at home, they're going to be trendy in year two with Coach Byington, and then at Arkansas. I mean, those are four tournament teams, I think, as far as folks view the preseason this year, and you've got those four games in a row, two of them away from home. And then State, I think folks could be pretty high on State.
I think there's a bunch of good ones. But, yeah, I'd go back to January 20th, 21st, where it's at Ole Miss, at Florida, Texas, at Tennessee, and Alabama. That's five as difficult a games as anybody's going to probably face in a row.
You mentioned the non-conference slate. I think there's a real chance when we get the college basketball polls. I mean, it's having Houston, Purdue, Michigan, and Florida in your top five is totally legitimate.
Yeah.
And Auburn plays all four of those teams and doesn't play any of them at Neville Arena.
Yeah.
So that is an ambitious. I mean, you do have a bit of a runway before you play Houston and Birmingham, but as far as starting out the season, but that's an ambitious non-conference, and then you get into the SEC, and it feels more wide open than last year because so many teams are starting over or have to replace so much.
I could see 9, maybe 10 of the top 25 being SEC teams, though. I could see that preseason.
Oh, and several, and still some national championship.
Oh, absolutely, you know, national possibilities. I mean, because I think Kentucky's always going to be a team that people go, I think that team can win a national championship. They're going to be there.
Florida just did it.
Florida's going to be a trendy pick with everybody they have coming back. Arkansas in year two of Cal is going to get some love. Alabama, Auburn's going to get love. You start Tennessee what's it happened there? You're going to have those types of teams no matter what, and I do think you're right. I think a Mississippi State is going to be a team that people are going to go prepare for. Chris Beard at Ole Miss another year. I mean, I think there's some things that you look at. I mean, it's going to be a gauntlet, and who knows what Texas is going to have.
I was going to say Sean Miller at Texas, another one where it's like, who knows? Yeah. How about Bucky? I mean, we'll see what Bucky Ball looks like.
They will not be fun to play. I know that.
Yeah, I mean, I think you know what's cool about that is. So often we'll see, and look, and I totally understand when a successful coach leaves and you look for something in the same style as that successful coach. Like, I get that. But Buzz Williams and Bucky are polar opposites as far as the styles and the kind of players they look for. Buzz Williams is so intensely focused on that pressure defense. And it's just, I think A&M's going to be, I agree. It's going to be very different, but they're going to be no fun to play. And Auburn has them first SEC game at home. They open at Georgia, and then they've got A&M midweek right after that. So Bucky gets an early trip to Neville Arena as part of his first season at the helm in College Station. We'll take a break, and we'll come back with more. We got Jason Caldwell in the house. This is the Wednesday edition of The Drive. Stick around.
The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Couple minutes left in the first hour. Here on the Wednesday Drive, Dan Peck, Coach Don Dunn, hanging out, Drew at the controls. Jason, wanted to ask about Jackson Arnold, because that's been a topic of conversation over the last couple of days, and you know, there's a lot riding on Jackson going into this season, and it feels like, you know, there are, especially with everybody healthy, the conditions are there for Auburn to have an explosive offense. What's your sense of how Jackson has handled the first week of preseason practice, and Hugh Freeze's assessment of his quarterback?
Yeah, I wrote today too. I think probably the biggest thing right now for them is to not try to do too much. I think that's the thing, because this is a roster that's talented enough.
It's classic Butch Thompson, to by make, the way, isn't it? Trying to do too much is the enemy
it.
Of.
That's
of,
it. Yeah, you just go, hey, take what's there. Because, I mean, here, in the last couple of years, they had to try to do those things. And it, when it worked, it was good. I mentioned, like, Peyton Thorne's numbers pretty good last year. 21 touchdowns, 9 interceptions. You go, not bad. But you go, look, 4 interceptions against Cal, 1 big interception against Oklahoma. You go, man, just those 2 games right there. And you go, you're 7 wins without anything else. And you go, decision-making, probably a big deal.
You're positioned to win the Arkansas game.
Yeah, and so Missouri, you start going. Yeah. Like, now, Missouri, I'm not putting that one on him. But, I mean, there were opportunities. And you go, man, maybe trying to be too aggressive at times or make the right – so I said, hey, just make the play that's available. And so that's been the key. And he said, look, thought he did a good job of that today. And defense is going to win some of these. And that's especially when you get into camp because, again, we talk about the human nature thing. In human nature, the defense wants to win. Mm-hmm. And if they've seen this play 78 times the first 4 days of practice.
Know your calls, your checks,
everything. Yeah, and that's why I said you're not game planning in practice. And so something that's been misconstrued, in my opinion, has been when Hugh Freeze said, look, you know, ask him to take it easy on Jackson Arnold. He wasn't saying, look, don't challenge him. What he was saying is, look, don't send things that we're not prepared to counter with. And that's it, because you can go win on defense. If they're not checking, you can win every snap you want to on defense by just going, look, we're going to give you something different. You have no chance to check out of that play. It's over with. So they're trying to go, look, let's make
sure.
But
that doesn't get you ready for Baylor on either side of the ball.
No, either side.
Yep.
So now you're like, look, this is what the look we think we're going to get. This is how we counter that look, and let's run those things. When you get in a scrimmage, you'll start to go, okay, let's maneuver a little bit and help out some to give you a chance to have a positive play. I think so far he's been pretty good. Again, I come back to that other thing, though, is like you don't want either side to be great at this point, in my opinion. Because if either side is just dominating the other side,
it could reflect weakness.
That's scary.
Yeah, it could reflect weakness on the side.
And the other part, too, is, as Don will tell you, as an old coach, we talked to these guys, been talking to them for a long time. If the defense isn't ahead of the offense the first week, you're probably in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think right now I would say, yeah, the defense is winning, but they should be winning right now.
A competent defense should be ahead of the offense in the first week and first few weeks even. But that's, you know, that's something that I think a lot of coaches – that's an adage that coach – especially when you're talking about a quarterback breaking in, breaking in a new quarterback and such.
So
yeah. I'm sorry, Jed. Like you said, you know, we used to always say, win the drill. You know, you don't want to win the drill every time. And we used to get in arguments with the offense, defense. You're competitors.
Yes.
And you don't like it when that offense kicks your butt. Yes. I don't care if it's in a one-on-one pass rush or whatever. And you remember those battles with Hugh Knoll and Terry Price and I. Good gosh.
Yeah, but that's it. So you, at the end of the day, yes, when you go back and watch film – you love to see your guys winning every time, but you know for the overall health of this team.
Exactly.
Then Marcus McNeil better win some of those.
Yes.
Because if he doesn't, and you're going, well, we're just dominating those guys every day, then you're going,
it's not
they're
realistic.
Probably fixing to take some of my guys over there is what they're going to do.
Yeah, it's not realistic.
real quick, as we're about to hear the music, your sense of how the O-line is holding up?
I think it's been solid. Okay. I really do. And that's the thing. It's again, it's hard to to figure out again because – once you start to plan, once you start to check and do those things, then you start to give yourself a chance. Right now, it's just lining up and going. But Xavier Chaplin, I think, is a guy that is, to me, Jackson Arnold's obviously, to me, Xavier Chaplin may be as important as any player on this team. Because if you have that guy, if you have that left tackle, that changes the game for everybody on the offensive line. And so I think, to me, if he's as advertised, then I think this is a group that has a chance to be really good.
Jason, thank you so much. Outstanding stuff in hour number one. Tell folks what the rest of the gang is up to and where they can find you.
Yeah, like I said, a lot going on. Recruiting still rolling. Got a chance to add a wide receiver. Jace Matthews announced this Friday, a big-time wide receiver from Mississippi. I think Auburn's a really good shot for him. So we're monitoring that one as you head into this one. And then football. A lot going on as they continue to ramp up camp. And you're right, these next few days will be some pretty important ones for that, and see what kind of information we can get, because pretty much after tomorrow, it'll be next week for us when we get the next media opportunity. They'll have a scrimmage between those times, and so try to see how much information we can glean as well. So check us out, auburnundercover.com.
Auburnundercover.com, where you can find Jason. We will talk to you again very soon. Hour number two coming up.
The sports capital of Alabama. This is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back. Hour number two of the Wednesday edition of The Drive. We're back, right? All right, cool. We are. Yeah, it is Wednesday, and we are back. All right, wanted to make sure. As that's true with the controls, making sure that we are back on the air after a fantastic hour number one with our good buddy Jason Caldwell from Auburn Undercover. Yeah. If you missed any of Jason, check out the podcast, Podcasts of The Drive, presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors. You can go to ESPNAU.com or use the use your favorite podcasting platform and find podcasts of the show. Really appreciate Jason. That was some great stuff.
Yeah, he does a great job. He's just not only a great guy, but always done a great job. Always was so good to us. He would help us. You know, he'd find a guy out recruiting. I mentioned this the other day. He may come in and say, "Hey, need to take a look at this kid at so and so." Because, you know, back then and still today, he would see a lot of high school players.
Still sees a lot. I mean, and, yeah. And could be watching high school football a week from Wednesday.
Yeah.
A week from Friday.
Yeah.
Georgia starts. I mean, you could see some Georgia football.
Unbelievable.
And then a week later, Auburn High is gearing up.
Auburn's got three tough ones to start with, and so does Opelika.
It's cool that Auburn's playing on the Thursday so that you don't have
that's great.
Auburn-Baylor.
They're very smart.
I know you're upset that it's a Friday night
I'm
affair.
I'm still not a college Friday night guy, but hey, that's okay.
All right, and hey, Drew, did you see the alert that we just got on the All right, well, Drew just saw that we apparently are getting beaming in from Cameron Estates.
Uh-oh.
And we'll see if Bill, is it?
I'm here.
Okay, all there's right. Bill. Is he hot? Is he? Okay, there we go.
Yeah, is that?
Yeah, no. We had to push some buttons here in the studio, Bill, to get you on
the.
Yeah,
I heard the intro, so I thought, okay.
No, you sound great.
After that, so.
No,
I.
All right, Bill Cameron joins us from fresh off the IL
I'm not off the IL yet. I can tell you it'll be a little while before I'm able to do an awful lot. But yeah, I can talk. Hopefully, I can. I was explaining to Dan a while ago. Surgery, everything seemed to go well. But one of the things it's my left knee, and I've had problems with this for years. I mean, I bought all kinds of different things, going all the way back to when I was in school and playing a little touch football with a couple of the Auburn football players, and touch got a little rougher than touch, and I had I'd torn some cartilage in there just before finals. I mean, way way back. But I've had multiple surgeries on it, and finally, after a fall a couple of months ago, slip a couple of months ago, and landed on it with it twisted. It just needed to go ahead and get replaced. But the one thing that I've also had in that left leg has been it's like a restless leg type thing, you know, with just a when I'm tired, well, especially when I'm really tired, and if my leg is straight out and I try to lie down, it's going to jump. It's going to jump. And so I asked the doctor before the surgery, I said, hey, this isn't going to be a problem. Is it? Because I sure don't want the doctor ready to cut in there and all of a sudden my leg's jumping. And he said, no. The medicine, the block and everything they put in there is going to paralyze it. Well, apparently everything went fine. PT says I'm doing extremely well after a couple of days of that. But dang, if that restless leg syndrome hasn't kicked in, and if my leg was in an immobilizer, so it was straight out, and that just made it start jumping. And when it started jumping, it was just aggravating right where the surgery had been, and it was miserable night before last. Last night they gave me a nerve medicine that helped that, but it knocked me completely out. So the problem I'm having during the day is either I get that, and I was talking with Dan a while ago. Right now, I've just gotten back up, so I'm letting my leg hang down. When it hangs down, then it starts swelling and the blood runs to it. They want you to keep your leg elevated as much as possible. But when it hangs down, at least I'm not having the pains. Because when I am having the pains, it's terrible. I mean, it'll feel all right, and with no warning, all of a sudden it's going to catch it. And I'll do something like that. I mean, it's like I'm sure it would seem hilarious.
Yeah, no, it's, yeah,
try, if it weren't happening to me. Yeah.
Well, yeah. I mean, it does seem. Yeah. The you know, talking to you on the phone earlier today, it did seem like, you know, the occasional electric shock, you know, would.
It's exactly what it's like. It's like you've got an open wound and somebody's torturing you with they've got a wire that's running to an open wound, and just every once in a while with no warning, let's flip the switch. So, I think things are definitely headed in the right direction. If I can just get enough rest. See, that's the thing. I've got to get enough rest so that the leg doesn't want to start jumping at any time.
Yeah, that's good, Bill. Glad to hear you, buddy. You sounded a little rough yesterday when I talked to you.
But yesterday was awful.
I couldn't help but get tickled when you, and I know it's not funny, believe me. I've been through a bunch of hip surgeries.
Oh, it's sort of funny to me when it's not happening.
When you go,
because I hear what I'm doing when I'm talking, like, all of a sudden I'm screaming like that. Because it is sort of funny. I mean,
yeah,
when
it's not funny when it's you.
It ain't funny at all. You know, you're not kidding. Sounds like it's been a pretty busy time. I hate that. I hate that I missed practice. You got another opportunity in the morning, Dan, right?
Yeah, I'm going to go. I'm going to go check out practice in the morning. It should be, I don't know. Should be a good time, and we'll see what the updates are. You know, Hugh Freeze warned everybody Tuesday night that these next few practices were going to be a step up as far as how physical and how demanding they were going to be, and was largely. I don't know if you saw the press conference, Bill, was largely displeased. You know, and maybe that's going too far with it, but he thought compared to the energy level at other earlier practices they've had this preseason, especially the one on Monday, he thought that this was this was somewhat lackluster in comparison, and that's something, you know, I'm sure. I mean, Coach, what was the reaction when energy wasn't where it needed to be for a preseason practice?
It's hard, and it, you know, you'll go three or four days in a row, you feel like you're having a great practice, and then fatigue sets in, soreness, the humidity, you know, all those things. It's hard to maintain it, and it's normal. But as a coach, you just got to push through, keep motivating. That's when you count on your seniors for leadership. They got to take over and kind of, hey, come on, guys, let's get this going. But it's normal. I know coaches want a perfect practice every day. And the coaches sometimes don't give probably what they should. They get worn down. They get hoarse. They get tired. They get hot. But you just got to push through, and it's a normal thing. It happens in the pros, high school, college. It has forever, and it will continue.
How important is your upperclassmen leadership in that, too? So, you know, the guys that set the standard.
The guys have been through it before. They know what it takes. They played in the SEC. That's what you count on. You can only say so much as a coach. After a while, you know, if you got a guy just constantly screaming, and yelling, talking, you know how it is. You You block them out.
You know, you start to sound like one of Charlie Brown's teachers.
Right.
Right. You start one of the grown-ups on the on the Peanuts cartoon. Yeah. It's just you're talking in womps.
Yeah.
Is all it's going to be. If that's.
And you know, after a while, and you're right, Dan, that's when you need one of your big guys to grab a hold of a guy or put your arm around somebody and say, come on, man, we got to get this done.
Even in an age of sort of mercenary transactional football.
Right.
Auburn's got guys that have been through the program for several years, and you think that, you know, they're going to be called upon, that leadership council
you
always hear about.
Yeah.
Those are the guys that, especially if it's a problem tomorrow, right? Like, that's when, and I imagine, you know, it probably won't be after Hugh Freeze.
No, I don't think it'll be a problem tomorrow. When they watch film today or tonight, there'll be some hurt feelings coming out of that room, I hope.
And some guys have something to prove tomorrow.
Yeah, and they'll challenge them in the morning. And Coach Freeze will get on the assistants. Hey, what are you doing, man? I come down there and your guy's standing around feeling sorry for himself. There's pressure on everybody. I mean, this is SEC. This isn't junior high.
Bill?
Yeah, no, that's what I was going to say, Don, is look, no coach, I don't know that I've ever heard a coach rave about every practice in the preseason or the spring.
No.
You're going to have those days, but the most important thing is tomorrow. This is sort of a challenge to the leaders on the team and to all of them. Like, all right, let's see it tomorrow. If they do have the same problems tomorrow, then the coaches are going to be concerned. But I don't think anybody gets overly concerned when, after a few days of practice, there's an off day. I mean, they are human.
Exactly.
And it would almost be unbelievable if I heard the coach come in every day and say, yeah, we've had nothing but great practices all fall.
Yeah, you're not going to get that. I don't care. The Green Bay Packers go through the same thing. And you hear their coaches say, man, we didn't have a great practice this week. I mean, I'm sorry, this afternoon or this morning. But you're right, Dan, it's got to be the upperclassmen. It's got to be the coaches, the assistant coaches. You know, you got enough of them out there, so let's get them going.
All right, we got Bill Cameron on the Comrex from the home studio. We will have more with Bill. Love to hear from you. 334-321-1390, the number to dial. Dan and Don Dunn in the studio, Drew with the controls. That's the Drive Hotline presented by Sky Bar. We'll talk to, you know, Bill went to the practice on Saturday. We'll get his read on some of the players who are doing well through the first few days and his reaction to Coach Freeze's remarks earlier and a whole lot more. Stick around. This is The Drive.
The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck. ESPN 1067. Online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back. Wednesday edition of The Drive, Dan Peck in the studio. Drew with the controls, Coach Don Dunn hanging out as we react to the first week or so of Auburn preseason practice. Love to hear from you, 334-321-1390 on the Drive Hotline presented by Sky Bar. We had Jason Caldwell in for the first hour. Check the podcast out if you missed any of that. Podcast presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors, available wherever you get your favorite podcasts. We got Bill Cameron playing the home game. The take home edition of The Drive from the studio and Bill would love to hear, you know, sort of your thoughts after a week, or players that have that have improved their position in your mind through these first couple of days of practice. Anybody who's really caught your eye?
There are a few, as a matter of fact. I mean, I would think that I guess offensively. Omar Mapson's somebody that has caught a lot of eyes here early on. I mean, not just the fact that, you know, that a coach or two has mentioned, all the players keep talking about him too. So the Auburn High product taking advantage of opportunities with everybody not being full speed out there, but the receivers all look as, you know, as advertised. Pretty cool to see Cameron King got put on scholarship today. He made a couple of nice plays in the scrimmage on Saturday, and he was put on scholarship. The offensive line looks, I mean, they really look to be solid. I didn't see much being done by anybody against Xavier Chaplin the other day, the Big X. So, if he is as advertised and Auburn has a true left tackle that has some NFL potential, that's gonna make the offense just so much better. But it's young guys that we were looking at the other day. I mean, you look at the young linebackers, Elijah Melendez, Juice Diaz, Xavier Atkins. I mean, those guys all are similar to DeMarcus Riddick. And, man, I don't know that I've ever seen that many linebackers with that kind of speed on an Auburn team. We've seen some before when they had some undersized guys, but they've got some excellent speed there at linebacker, which I think is going to make it easier at times for Auburn to not have to go, to the dime. They can keep one of those linebackers in there who is fast enough to cover a back or a tight end for sure. So I think that'll help when you don't have to make some subs there. And then just watching all the young guys on defense up front and in the secondary. I mean, the young and new guys. Jordan Crawford, I thought, was dominant on Saturday. Great to see Amaris Williams looking like he is really taking a step forward this year. I mean, he played a little last year, but, I mean, he really looked like everyone has said, a new addition of Keldrick Falk. And, boy, to have two of those guys is great. I thought Jared Smith, the freshman, looked good. I mean, he's got such reach. And, you know, Don, you were talking about this the other day. I mean, you don't always – sure, you want to sack the quarterback.
Right.
But it's great if you've got guys that are 6'5", 6'6", that can get their arms up and, block the view and be able to potentially bat down passes.
Yeah, no doubt. It's hard to throw around those guys or through those guys. Just affect the quarterback some way. Get those hands up, get in the throwing lanes for sure.
And then in the secondary, I mean, everybody's talking about Ken Lee and Jay Crawford. I thought Rayon Strader was really impressive on Saturday. He made three or four shutdown plays and didn't get a chance to see, the practice yesterday, but nice to hear that Rayshon Pleasant's back out there. So, I mean, I understand why things have been going well, and also the disappointment when you've got this kind of roster. Hugh Freeze was talking about the expectations and being expected, things like that, that a day, a bad day is something he wants to jump on them on. And that, again, is why we'll find out tomorrow. And I think it's great that the media is going to be able to get out there. You'll be able to see, how thrilled the coaches are with the players while you're watching practice in the morning.
Yeah, I'm very interested to see the reaction to how how things look tomorrow and how, in general, people have reacted to what was apparently, not Auburn's best practice today. And so, yeah, with the scrimmage on Friday, tomorrow's practice feels huge. And then Friday, under the lights in, we'll see when they try to practice. I think has he mentioned Friday night before as sort of the thought because Auburn's playing?
No, he hasn't really said. He hasn't said. I think that's a good question to find out is when the scrimmages are going to be, because obviously as we were talking, I mean, they've moved the practices up to the mornings, but I would imagine the scrimmage might be more at a similar time to game time against Baylor.
Right. So we'll see what the what the word is there as far as when Auburn is practicing and what the word. Hey, all right, Bill. Do you want to hang on for the rest of the segment? We got John on the phone. Are you feeling up for it or?
Yeah, I think I can make it through the segment. It's all just right. Starting to. I'm trying to avoid the leg twitching, but that's bringing on sort of the swelling and the.
I mean, we're all here in the dugout wondering if we need to go to the bullpen here if you got one more in you.
Oh,
but it's all right. Let's get to John, who's on the phone.
Hey guys, Bill. Hope you get feeling better.
I appreciate it. Hey.
Had a quick question. Just wanted y'all's thoughts on this, and just a different way to ask the running back question. Would you say we have more touches from running backs who were on the roster last year or more touches this season from running backs who were not on the roster last season? Thank you, guys.
That's a good question, because when you add Darrell Robinson in there, with Darrell Robinson and the two freshmen, will they get more touches than Damari Alston and Jeremiah Cobb? That's a good question.
You know, I would have said before, and I probably would still lean towards, if everybody's healthy, I would say Alston and Cobb are getting a big enough share that you're probably going to go with the returners. But I would, you know, but at the same time, you've heard a ton of great stuff about Omar, and Darrell Robinson has been one of the more impressive additions as well. So that's a great question. I think it's hard to say right now. I still, you know, I was mentioning it earlier with Jason, like, as impressive as Omar Mabson has been, with everybody healthy, I just wonder what kind of opportunity is truly going to be there. Are they going to go with four running backs? Are they really going to exclude one of the other guys to get Mabson a lot? Like early on, I mean, it's going to, we've seen freshmen take the reins at running back. So it's not out of the question. But I would want to see a healthy Alston and a healthy Cobb, for that matter, before I look at that as one of the more likely probabilities.
Yeah, we'll see. And, I mean, the scrimmages are going to tell an awful lot. But one thing that I have also heard is Omar is the only one that hasn't put the ball on the ground. And that's going to go a ways to getting you even more looks. That, besides the fact that he is physical. He is very physical and explosive. Low center of gravity has been tough for them to bring down. But, again, you know, they haven't had that first scrimmage yet.
Yeah, it's really exciting. I think the fact that you'd be talking about a guy who's not just that he's local, but that you're talking about him maybe reclassifying and, you know, a guy with, like, it's exciting. I would hate to dismiss the possibility of Alston or Cobb still having a huge role, because we just haven't seen them for the first week. And with Mabson and with Darrell Robinson, it's an interesting problem, because they've got a lot of guys who seemingly fit the bill at running back, and when they're all available, it's going to be interesting to see how they deploy it, how they deploy these guys and decide who needs to be out there.
And that is the difference in this team, I mean, sort of in a nutshell. I mean, you look around and there are so many positions where there are a lot of guys who look like they could play SEC football and are practicing like that. So, I mean, it's a tough situation. It's a great situation to have, but you sure can't take it for granted that it's always going to be that way. And that's why we've said, you know, you're not playing for next year or the year beyond, you're playing for right now. Whoever can help you, regardless of if they have any experience or not, you need to play the ones that are going to give you the best chance to win.
All right, glad you're feeling better, Bill. Oh, you know what? Did you have any thoughts about the men's basketball schedule? I know that was released earlier today, and Auburn has, you know, Jason and I picked out a couple of stretches that look like they could be that they could be pretty tricky for this year's team, and the one that the one that stood out to me was at Tennessee, home against Alabama, home against Vanderbilt, at Arkansas, at State, home against Kentucky, which is a six-game stretch against six teams that I think will be picked for the NCAA tournament this year. I know more than half the league will probably be picked for the NCAA tournament, but you've got six games in a row there, including home games against Bama, Vandy, and Kentucky. That is going to be... That's going to be an excellent test for this team just a few weeks before the end of the season, with the NCAA tournament hopefully on the horizon.
Yeah, no question about it. Did we know, or am I wrong? Again, I'm still taking some stuff that to try to ease the pain at times. I'm not quite sure if I read it, heard it, saw it right. Did we know that Georgia was no longer a home and away opponent?
We knew who Auburn was playing earlier, and I believe they've shifted to either Bama and Ole Miss, or the only, or does Bama, does Auburn play Ole Miss twice? Yeah, Auburn still plays Ole Miss twice. I wonder if it's just Alabama and everything else is rotational now, and Auburn just happens to have Ole Miss for two more games as part of the rotation. But we did know that they had moved off of the three permanent opponent model in the SEC. For a long time, Auburn played Alabama, Georgia, and Ole Miss twice a year in men's basketball. I believe that teams only have one designated rival that they have to play twice a year, and everyone else, you see everyone in the conference at least once, But I think there's only one team that you're guaranteed to play twice. For Auburn, it's Alabama, and everything else can is subject to change based on the rotation. This year, Auburn has Arkansas twice, and they've got Ole Miss twice, and everyone else, along with Alabama twice, including the season finale in Tuscaloosa. Everyone else they play only once, including Florida, reigning national champion, that game towards the end of January in Gainesville.
It would seem like that anybody you'd been playing twice, with the exception of the one that you're going to play every year, you'd rotate off them. Yep. So that's why I was a little surprised that they're playing Ole Miss twice. But it's going to take a long time to rotate through playing everybody home and away.
It's going to take a while. I mean, luckily you still play everybody once, so it's not like you have these football-style long absences from seeing a team on your schedule. But you're right, it's going to be different. And I think the fact that Auburn drew Ole Miss as one of its two sort of rotational opponents adds to the confusion. But my understanding is that we know that you have now a one permanent rival system in the SEC as long as it's 18 games. You know, I guess that could change if they went to 20 or if they tinkered with the regular season that way. But as it stands now, yeah, Auburn playing Alabama twice a year. Everything else can rotate. And Auburn has some pretty interesting road games on the schedule, especially early. You know, I think some of the games in I guess in February you're talking Tennessee and Arkansas as well, and a pretty good Mississippi State team. But this is going to be it's going to be another highly competitive men's basketball season in the SEC. I think Auburn's got as good a shot as just about anybody when you think about how much upheaval there was in the conference, how many teams are replacing as much as these teams have to replace. I would want to see what the team looks like around Tejad, want to see what Tejad looks like in year two, but I think Auburn's got a real chance to make some noise in this year's SEC. Bill, appreciate you buzzing in for the first couple of segments in hour number two. We got Ferg in the studio tomorrow, but feel free to pop in and join us and join in as much as you can. Hope you get to feeling better, and we'll talk to you soon, all right?
All right, guys. Good talking to you.
Bill Cameron back on the show after a couple of days off with a knee replacement, and we'll be back with more as we continue the drive. Dan Peck, Don Dunn in the studio, Drew at the controls. We'll be back with more. This is The Drive.
Be a part of The Drive. Call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email us at thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back. Hour number two of the Wednesday edition of The Drive. Love to hear from you. 334-321-1390. Drive Hotline presented by Skybar as we get closer and closer to the start of the 2025 college football season. Auburn and Baylor opening in Waco on Friday, August 29th. You can catch that on Wings 94.3. Andy and the gang, including... How about that exciting news from Andy yesterday about one of the Edens boys?
Yeah.
Getting a live mic.
That is great. Yeah. I can't wait to hear him.
I gotta pull some strings. Maybe talk to
McCain. Maybe get him on the show.
And we gotta get Brett on the show real soon. I knew Bart pretty well too.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It's a good group of dudes.
Great family.
Yeah, and I'm excited about what they're going to contribute. Like Andy said, nice to have a little bit of defense.
Yeah.
The analysis.
Heck yeah.
As well. So that'll be that'll be real cool starting on the 29th. Love to hear from you as we got a buzz in from Bill Cameron as well for the first couple of segments.
Sounded pretty good.
Yeah, sounds all right. Let's get to Tex, who's on the phone. What's up, Tex?
Hey, not much. I had been away. I was going to talk a little bit about my trip for a minute, but I spent about 30, 35 minutes yesterday on the phone with Bill. And he sounds like a completely different person today.
Yeah, no so kidding.
He was having a rough day yesterday.
Yeah, I talked to him too, Tex, and he'd let out one of those squeals. You know, he'd get like a spasm or something. It must have been awful.
Yeah. Yeah, he told me he sounded like y'all had pigs that y'all were slaughtering in the back of the barbecue place. So,
for sure. So,
anyway, and having been through that, both my knees are replaced.
Wow,
it's not fun until you get to the point where you're healed, and then you realize you're no longer in pain. So it's really kind of neat. He sounded like he was in a studio, by the way, over the air.
Yeah, that's
his voice sounded like he was there.
So that is, I'll pull back the curtain on this one, Tex. That's the same equipment we use for football games. Like that's okay. we're breaking out the
travel.
Thankfully, we don't have to. We don't have multiple football games going on at the same time or basketball games, or else mm-hmm. Bill would be on a phone line. You know, Bill would have to start. Yeah. You know, Bill would be on the drive hotline joining the show. But we also used Skype, which is no longer an option. So we'll have to figure out a new. We'll have to get a Microsoft Teams account or something for the studio. But kudos to the station for being able to provide equipment that sounds like that when we go remote.
Yeah. Well, I thought it sounded really good because yesterday, of course, I'm assuming then it also includes a mute button. So if he did need to squeal, he hit the mute button.
If he gets the electric shock that pops up every couple of sentences, he can mute himself. But no, it's good to hear. Good to hear. Bill is. You know, feeling good enough to join the show. I told him with Jason and with Coach Don and with the callers, you know, I didn't want to pressure him into an early return or anything. Yeah. And it was nice that he's feeling up for it today and might join the show again tomorrow.
Yeah. Well, I think he and look, I've known him longer than both of you. I know he likes talking on the air and talking sports, and he's really good at it. So I'm glad he's recovering well. So here's my story. So a group of us from all across the country met in Iowa this last week for the Senior Olympics, and we were playing pickleball. We were at the pickleball venue, and it was quite amazing. And I've mentioned this before. It's my 40th wedding anniversary year. My wife and I have 40 years together, or 40 years married, September 21st. So she surprised me with a trip to Field of Dreams.
Wow.
And if you are a baseball geek like me, I love college football, but baseball is so deeply entrenched in me, it's crazy. Got to go to Field of Dreams, and I will just tell you, there's a song, what's the song, Clowns to the Left of Me, Clowns to the Right,
mm-hmm.
Still Stuck in the Middle. In Iowa, the song changes, and it's Corn to the Left, Corn to the Right, Here I Am, Stuck in the Middle Again. So we pulled up there, and driving down that road, I just started getting goosebumps, and spent time talking to one of the original Ghost players. He was not in the movie, but was one of the first ones to start doing reenactments 36 years ago. And
wow.
He tossed me his catcher's mitt, and being a catcher, I wanted to keep it. He wouldn't let me. It was his glove from 1959. So
good
the nostalgia
gosh.
That goes along with all this is just crazy, but I sent it to Bill. I got to walk out of the corn, but the best part was when the reenactment started taking place to watch the ghost players come out of the corn.
Wow.
And see it and know what that means. And by the way, so most people think the movie's just about trying to get a chance to play catch with your dad again or be with your dad again.
Mm-hmm.
That's a part. But for people like me, from the time my mom used to say all the time, at 3 years old, I learned the word swoosh because that's the sound that the baseball bat made. And from that time on, I was positive I was going to be a Major League Baseball player.
Yeah.
Well, I didn't have the body that could last that long, mm-hmm. so I never did make it. But still today, I tell the story. I wanted to play Major League Baseball.
Yeah.
And that's a lot of what it's about, too. But to watch the kids and their dads, the little girls and their moms and their dads, the little boys with the girls, and you know, it was just really cool to be in an environment like that and be a little nostalgic about a sport that you really love.
Wow.
And so I'm just telling everybody out there, if you ever decide you want to go there, make sure you go. I'm just going to tell you that.
Where is that exactly? What's it close to?
You go to the cornfield and take a ride. by the way, it's a It's
Dyersville,
it's
right?
It's in Dyersville, but Dyersville's about 2 hours north-northeast of Des Moines, which is where we played the pickleball event.
Okay.
And then we went back and we flew home out of Cedar Rapids, which is about 50 minutes due south. By the way, it's easy in, easy out. In
wow,
the
sounds awesome. Nothing. That would be really something.
It is worth going to.
Yeah.
That being said,
I flew into the Quad Cities one time, and I know they had like advertising for it. I think it's not too far from Davenport and wherever else the Quad City area is. But it sounds like a really one of the coolest things you can, you know, one of the top tourist attractions in that state.
Yeah, some of my friends went, "You realize it's in a cornfield, right?" And I'm just going, "Yeah, but that's, you don't understand the nostalgia of all that." But
my understanding is that you passed the world's largest truck stop to get there. Maybe you took an alternate route, but that was the other thing I remember seeing at the Quad Cities Airport.
Yes, there is the world's largest truck stop there too. Yes, oddly enough, I never saw very many trucks. There was never any traffic up there.
It's not the world's busiest. It's just the world's largest.
I will just tell you, Des Moines' idea of traffic jams in the morning and Baton Rouge's definition of traffic jams in the morning are completely different. we're jammed up forever, and you could drive around anywhere you wanted to there in plenty of just quickly.
It's probably similar to the definition of spicy food, right? I think it's.
Yes. And by the way, they did have a Cajun "quote unquote" restaurant, or a "quote unquote" Cajun restaurant, and they had half the names wrong anyway. And I was with a group of about 40 people from Louisiana, and we all go in there and we're just cracking up, laughing.
I bet,
because you know they tried to capture it, but just so you know, if you want good Louisiana food, come to Louisiana.
Exactly.
You're not going to get it.
Exactly.
You're not going to get it in Des Moines, Iowa. So, if you want corn, go to Des Moines.
Right.
But anyway, I heard you talking about running backs. So I just started thinking, when was the last time, Coach, that you can remember maybe teams really just using one guy and not having a rotation of two or three guys?
Wow.
It just struck me. I don't know why that struck me as odd, because – you know,
it's been a while. You know, we didn't rotate a lot when we had Cadillac and Ronnie. Mm-hmm. Ronnie ended up playing more fullback, very unselfish to him, because, you know, he could have gone a lot of places and been the star tailback. But that's a great question. I know recently you see a lot of running backs in the rotation.
Yeah, I would think Tank had some big seasons. Tex, was the question the last time teams didn't rotate?
Last time they didn't. I know we're rotating now and have been for several years. When's the last time we did? It's been going on for a while.
You know, but I would think Jarquez and Tank were both guys who, even though you saw the backup running back, like those were both guys where you saw the starter. Like I think they both, carved out a clear role for themselves as running back one. I would say Kerryon, Kerryon had, the 1,800-yard season in 17, that would probably be the last time Auburn had a huge individual season. Because even when I mentioned, Tank Bigsby was a pro prospect, but Jarquez Hunter played a lot in those Tank Bigsby years. Yeah. You're absolutely right. Kerryon was probably the last time Auburn leaned on one guy. I guess there were games where you could say that about Booby Whitlow, right? Like there were probably some huge usage games for Whitlow, but Kerryon would probably be the guy where you'd say for a full season, the last running back Auburn leaned on, considerably more than anyone else at that position on the team was probably, if you count Jarquez's contributions behind Tank, it was probably Kerryon.
Yeah. So it's just interesting, because it just seemed to me, and even that's 8 years ago, and, we're just thinking about that. The game seems to have changed, and I understand. I know the physicality. Their players are typically a little bit bigger. And then I started thinking, well, Donnie Humphrey and Doug Smith filled up a lot of holes in their time. So, we had guys like that. And just one last thing, there's two guys in, that now host the morning show here in Baton Rouge, and they said something really interesting today. And it's Jake and what's the guy that was a backup quarterback at the Green Bay Packers? Matt Flynn. Matt Flynn, and I forgot Jake's last name now. But they were talking about the hardest they've ever been hit, and they both wrote it down, and then the board op read them out. There was one name, and it came from Auburn. Guess who it was?
Ooh, Matt, the hardest hit Matt Flynn ever took would have been.
Yeah, took in college.
Yeah, took in college. Would have probably, I mean, it would have needed to be in that 07 game. So would it have been Trey?
No, Tequila Spike.
Tequila Spike.
Yeah.
Oh, Matt.
And they both said Tequila because he was angry the entire time until the game's over, and then he talks to you like he's your best friend. But then they played against him in the NFL. And they said the worst thing you could see in a preseason game is Tequila playing a preseason game because he didn't know the difference between preseason and regular season. I thought that's a pretty good compliment.
I believe that, and yeah, that's it's wild to think they both came up with the same guy. Great stuff, Tex.
Yep. All right, guys. Thanks.
Bye. Thank you.
334-321-1390. I was cycling in my head like guys who would have hit Matt Flynn in that 07 game, but I guess he would have bumped into Spikes at some point in his NFL career. That 07 game, coach. Oh man, that's the last second. That's LSU in the back of the end zone. Yeah. But that, I mean, that game was a war. That's about, I'll tell you what, there's a moment in that game that's about as hot as I ever saw Tuberville. When they reversed, they went back and used replay to check something and then like picked up a flag because of it. And I believe they interpreted the rule incorrectly and picked up a flag against LSU after looking at the replay. And Tommy Tuberville went ballistic. He went positively. And I think the Auburn defense responded with a pretty good series after that. But it was about, I mean, he was pretty good about keeping it, you know, respectful and for the most part
right.
friendly and professional with the
right.
refs.
Right.
At least his body language never indicated. Right. Like he blew a gasket when this happened. Because I think he knew how important the play was and how good the opponent was and the opportunity his team had to maybe win this game. And it was not to be that night, but what a football game! One of the you know, just one of those instant classics that you got to be a part of. 334-321-1390, the number to dial. That's the Drive Hotline presented by Skybar. We'll be back to wrap things up here as we head into the final segment. You are listening to The Drive.
Extra, extra. The referral per
1067 and online at espnau.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back. Final segment of the show. Hope you guys enjoyed it. Fun show with Jason Caldwell in the first hour. And a visit from Bill Cameron to start off hour number two. Check out the podcast. If you missed any of that, espnau.com or wherever you get your favorite podcast, just search for The Drive with Bill Cameron. All presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors. Tomorrow we should have Justin Ferguson in the house. And Bill can pop in whenever he wants. We're going to get a viewing window tomorrow morning. So we'll see a little bit more of the team as they respond to today's practice and get ready for Friday's scrimmage. We will see, and I believe we'll have some player availability after practice as well. So we'll talk to a few guys from this year's team, and then we'll get Justin Ferguson in here. He'll be. I'm going to try to go tomorrow morning. I know Ferguson will be there as well. So we'll get some reports from practice when we have and we're back on the air tomorrow, Coach. Again, thanks so much for filling in these last couple of days.
No problem.
We'll have you back, hopefully
Friday.
Back on Friday. And,
for sure.
Yeah, and it's, you know, I was around campus today.
It's getting ready.
It's getting ready, Coach. And it's
a few more people.
It's brewing, and we'll be We'll be here
before we know it.
We'll be gearing up, Coach, and you'll be on the smoker on Friday nights
and all night long,
getting folks ready for game day. But that's again, if you missed any of the show, check out the podcast. Really appreciate Jason and Bill for contributing to today's show as well. And yeah, looking forward to what we get from Coach Hugh Freeze and the players tomorrow when we get a chance to view practice as the game is. We're rapidly approaching 3 weeks away from Auburn-Baylor to start the 2025 season. Again, that game will be on Wings 94.3 here in the Auburn-Opelika area with Andy Burcham and the gang on Friday night, August 29th. Andy mentioned that the 18th, your first Tiger Talk of the academic year, and then 1 week later, they'll do their first normal edition of the show, or their first from the traditional venue, and that's going to be game week. So I mean, we are right on top of it as August continues here on the drive, and yeah, it's getting fun with college football season just around the corner here on the Auburn Network family of stations, and that includes Wings 94.3, of course, which will also have Auburn High School. That's a week before. I mean, we are right on top of the Auburn High School season. We'll have to get Jacob on at some point to help preview this year, a big one for Auburn High School, and you can catch those games on Wings 94.3 as well with that season starting in just a couple of weeks. I mean, that's like, I think the week before the Auburn game, right? So I mean, we're just about 10 days away from game week when it comes to Auburn High School, and students will be back in that time as well with the university. So again, appreciate all the calls. A big shout out to Jason for hour number one, Bill for jumping in hour number two, Coach Don Dunn and Drew at the controls. For the whole gang, it's Dan Peck signing off. Talk to you tomorrow. Good night.